Welcome to Spiritual Insights with Charlotte Spicer. Spirituality and Metaphysics Talk Radio, featuring A Course in Miracles, Dream Interpretation, Guided Meditation, and the Psychic and Metaphysics Free-for-All. It's your opportunity to consult with a professional psychic medium, discuss past lives, the chakras, and more. We are non-denominational, and there are no limits. Want to change your life? You must first change your mind. No matter your religious structure, cultivate peace in your reality through self-awareness with an authentic spiritual teacher. And now, your host, Charlotte Spicer.
Hello, and welcome to Spiritual Insights, everyone. I am Charlotte Spicer, executive producer and host of the show, advanced energetic healer, and channel for Yeshua, also known as Jesus, and other members of the divine. Thank you so much for tuning in from the United States and around the world. For those new to the show, I am honored by your presence. To learn more about the Spiritual Insights community, visit spiritualinsightsradio.com. Community members are invited to attend online workshops and free events, such as the Psychic and Metaphysics Free-for-All, a monthly Ask Me Anything event, and you will have access to the recordings of the Holy Trinity Guided Meditation, a profoundly healing technique guided by Yeshua and channeled by me. Life-changing energetic healing sessions are performed in collaboration with Jesus and my divine team of ascended masters, supreme beings, and archangels. Today, I have the pleasure of introducing you to a pioneer in the spiritual community, Mr. David Christopher Lewis. This segment will be the first in a three-segment series. David is a co-founder of the Heart Center in Livingston, Montana, an Aquarian Essene community. He is an inspired spiritual teacher, musical composer, author, and clear conscious channel, one who relays or records messages from spirit while fully conscious for ascended masters and numerous members of the divine, including our beloved Jesus and Kuan Yin. A dedicated spiritual student for 5 decades, David began receiving telepathic communications from the Ascended Masters in 2004, instructing him to launch a new movement. And in February 2005, the Heart Center came into being. As a nonprofit charitable organization, the Heart Center is dedicated to sharing the revelatory teachings of the Ascended Masters to all who seek expansion. Since its inception, it has grown into a worldwide movement with broadcast centers or local groups in the United States and 9 other countries, including Canada. Advanced initiates enjoy a wide spectrum of live online and on-demand courses in an interactive environment through Maru University, the educational branch of his community. And through Maru Press, the publishing arm of the Heart Center, David has written 11 major releases, which include Jesus's Jewels of Joy, a conveyance of inspiring, compelling, and humorous teachings from Jesus on cultivating joy in your life, Kuan Yin on Mercy, Forgiveness, and the Bodhisattva Path, where the Goddess of Mercy shares wisdom and love to help us move forward, as well as Advanced Studies of the Human Aura, How to Change Your Energy Field with Light and Spiritual Radiance. These divine teachings delivered through David as channeled messages he calls heart streams are meant to assist individuals everywhere to awaken to their own divinity. Today, we will discuss Jesus's Jewels of Joy, and as our schedules permit, David and I will return to the airwaves to explore both of the remaining two titles in depth. You can learn more about David and all that he and his co-founders offer the spiritual community at heartscenter.org. The spelling for heart is plural, so that is heartscenter.org. We have so much to unpack here, so I'd like to jump right in and welcome David to the show. Hello, David, and thank you so much for being with us today.
Thank you, beloved Charlotte. What an amazing opportunity.
We have quite a bit in common, and so I was so excited to have you as a guest. And I want you to know how well you fit in with what we teach here. This new energy in the Aquarian age is all about the three C's, as my listeners know: community, connectedness, and compassion. And you carry a bright torch that dispels the world's shadow. So tell us when that fire was ignited on your path. Take us back in time. And according to your bio, you were pretty much an ordinary teenager. What was the pivotal moment that put you on a spiritual path?
Well, my mom read a book on Edgar Cayce when I was in eighth grade, and I read it, and I had been born and raised Catholic, and I wanted to be a priest.
Did you?
Well, when I was in second grade, but it changed. But Edgar Cayce really spoke to my heart on karma and reincarnation, explained everything. So my parents began an ARE study group in our home. Then I found Khalil Gibran, the prophet, who I love that teaching. And many people may not know, but he wrote a book called Jesus, the Son of Man, which is about five times larger than the prophet. It's an amazing book, looking at Jesus' life from many perspectives. So I read that. Then I found that Life and Teachings of the Masters of the Far East the next year. That was profound. There's five volumes, and since then, a sixth has been written. Finally, the thing that really shifted me the most was reading The Essene Gospel of Peace by Edmond Bordeaux Zacchet. And in 1928, he was in the Vatican and found the teachings of Jesus on health and vitality and wellness that was written in Aramaic, Jesus' actual spoken language. He translated it into English, and then there were many volumes. I fasted for 7 days, had a mystical experience, and I felt that I received from him a direct impartation of the sacred fire in my heart. And then shortly thereafter, I found the Summit Lighthouse and the teachings through Mark and Elizabeth Clare Prophet, which I was involved in for 30 years. So I actually went to the university, served on the staff for over 25 years, and that was the most dramatic change in my life. And so I had an example of two messengers for the Ascended Masters. And then I had a mystical experience in 2004, first with Jesus in my home in Paradise Valley, Montana. I was just going to write down my spiritual experiences in life, which were hundreds and thousands of miracles and mystical thing happenings. And lo and behold, Jesus came, and I didn't even know it was him, actually, because it was telepathic. I started writing, and he took over and wrote through me, and I was kind of shocked. I wouldn't consider it automatic writing, but it was almost like that. And at the end, I signed Jesus, and he said to meditate every morning. I had been praying every morning for 30 years, from 1 to 2 hours every morning, giving a New Age rosary, etc. But that shift, that Jesus created the shift, and I believe he was instrumental in giving me this gift of clairaudience, which is in the Catholic tradition called locution. So it's a direct transmission, it's telepathic, it's instant knowing, there's no equivocation. I know it's not me. And when Jesus came, there was tremendous radiation and love, and that was the beginning. So I've given close to 7,000 what we call heart streams, which are empowered by the Holy Spirit, and they're full of love, they're full of energy, and then a beautiful, beautiful, profound message. So that's kind of how it all began 20 years ago.
Wow. I was born into Catholicism as well. Do you feel as I do? Because that story sounds pretty progressive, where, your mom seemed to be very encouraging. My mother was too. My mother was a professional astrologer. I only went to Catholic school for 3 years, but I got in trouble a lot because they would say things and it would chafe against something. I knew it went against some kind of truth that I was aware of, but didn't know how I knew. And so I would contradict the nuns and say, that's not true, or that's not what you said in October. And so I got to know Mother Superior quite well. And she explained to me, finally, after many talks of trying to get me to not go against the teachings, and she explained, these stories just teach children how to behave. And I said, why didn't you just say that in the first place? Instead of telling me I'm bad, that kind of thing. And so she made a deal with me. Don't interrupt, sister. And if you have any questions, you come and ask me. The truth is, you're just not like other kids. And so it was a very validating moment. So it sounds like you had quite a number of validating moments to support you on your journey. Do you feel as I do that the Catholic religion provided a solid foundation upon which you built a much higher belief system?
Yeah, and the mystical aspects of what some saints experienced having the foundation of Catholicism were profound. I mean, I love Padre Pio. I love reading about the lives of these mystic saints who had a direct communion with God. And They, you know, maybe they meditated on the Sacred Heart of Jesus, the Immaculate Heart of Mary, which I did, yet they went deeper and higher. And so they were often, you know, chastised by the hierarchy of the church. And of course, we know the Pope is not infallible. And I too had the same types of experience. I would ask the priest, well, I don't understand why a child would go to, you know, who's so innocent would go to limbo, you know, if he wasn't baptized, stuff like that. And
Exactly.
I didn't really believe in a hell. I never believed in a beautiful, loving God would create a hell. I still don't. You know, we create our own hell by our consciousness, and we know that. So, yeah, but it was a good foundation, and I still had a devotion of Mary, which was really important for me. And even though I had stopped going to Catholic Mass from the time I was a freshman until I was 18, when I found the Summit Lighthouse, there was a New Age rosary, which was very profound. Instead of calling ourselves sinners, we'd say sons and daughters of God. Instead of now at the hour of our death, we would say now and at the hour of our victory over sin, disease, and death. So giving this rosary, I every day, 5 o'clock, 6 o'clock in the morning for 30 years, finally Mary appeared to me in 2002. And well, it wasn't quite 30 years then, almost. And that was transformative. And then Jesus came 2 years later. So my foundation is Catholicism. I still revere what I learned, yet it was not the end all and the be all.
Beautiful. Speaking of religions, you had 5 decades of study in various spiritual and religious traditions. My question is, what were a few of the highlights of, well, you just explained that, didn't you?
A little bit, but I've studied every religion. I love Zoroastrianism, Buddhism, Taoism, Hinduism. I've received many hundreds and hundreds of messages from the Hindu deities, from Gautama Buddha, Lord Maitreya Buddha, many Buddhas. We will eventually have a book on 3 different books on the Buddha's messages through me. The Hindu gods and goddesses, when I do chants of the kirtan or bhajans, I go right up into the highest frequency. I'm in bliss, I'm in ecstasy. And many times when I'm doing bhajans, I smell the aromas of these mystical deities. And it is so ecstatic that I almost lose consciousness. So, you know, the mystical traditions of all the religions are founded on the same principles of truth and divine love and harmony and the golden rule. So actually the holiest man I've ever met in this life was a Muslim. And I had an art gallery. He came into my art gallery. I felt his aura 40 feet away. I was in my office. He walks in the door and I get this rush through my whole body. Well, I came out to meet him. I knelt down and kissed his feet. He didn't freak out that I did that. But what I realized later, after he came back the year after, and then I met him in Berkeley, California, was he was my teacher in a past life. And he found me, and he transferred a whole energy to me that happened right before I became, quote, a messenger or an amanuensis for the ascended masters. I'm not really that hip on fundamentalism and Islam, the mystical traditions of the, you know, the whirling dervishes and the Rumi. That's what I love about Islam.
Well, I had an opportunity to just flip through a Quran. Friends of mine were Muslim, and they were hesitant, but I asked if I could, peruse it for a little bit. It's quite similar to the Bible. It's so similar. I don't understand all of the hoopla around the Muslim religion. So when channeling opened up for you throughout all of these experiences, what was that like for you? Were you startled? Because you said you started writing, Jesus took over. Did it feel as natural to you as it did for me? Or did you have a little bit of, stunned humility, and
I
then you just
was
got used to it?
Yeah, I was initially surprised, but then it's totally natural because I love to write. I have really good handwriting from being a Catholic. And I would just write and write and write. And then I typed, and it was faster because I could type faster than I could write. And then it became oral later. So it started out, it's all telepathic. It
Yes.
started out slower and then gradually became faster. And now I don't question what comes because when the Holy Spirit comes overshining me through any master's presence, I know the energy of the perfect love, the light, the radiance. It's a supercharge of my chakras. My chakras are literally on fire. And then the message comes, and it's always about divine love. It's always about unity, harmony, peace, and sacrificial giving, but and forgiveness, all these things, all these virtues, and it's always uplifting, and it's always about humility, as you mentioned. So it was very humbling. It still is humbling. I myself can't do anything. It's the spirit that does it, as you know. And without that mantle that I think I have by God's grace, that Jesus and Kuthumi, who was the second master, came, put on me, I couldn't do anything. So I think there's a special spiritual mantle that comes for those who have been chosen because they have sublimated themselves to the will of God. They've served, they've prayed, they've fasted, they've done all the groundwork of reaching that level of spirituality that we actually had in other lifetimes. So many of the people I know in our movement, when I look at their karmic record in Akasha, they were saints. They were the mystics. They were the ones who were murdered, by the Catholic Church.
Yes.
And as a whole, many of us were Essenes. That's why we say on our website, an Aquarian Essene community. And I, it's interesting that there was a clairvoyant from South Africa who told me once, I knew that I had been in the Essene community. I thought there was only one, a Qumran. She said, David, you started an Essene community. I said, what? It wasn't until 2 years later, I read a book. There were nine Essene communities in the Middle East and the Israel area, and then there's Alexandria and Egypt. So I didn't know that. I started the one in another life at Mount Carmel, which
Really?
was very important. It was probably the second most important after Heliopolis or Alexandria and Qumran. Qumran, of course, we know the Dead Sea Scrolls were found just outside Qumran in the caves. But Mount Carmel was where a lot of the teachers were being trained, and the initiates were really getting a lot of their initiations. Jesus actually went to the one in Qumran primarily. So he and John the Baptist were sponsored by these Essenes at a very young age after Jesus came back from Egypt when his parents went. And they came back when Herod died, but he was trained in the by the Essenes. Very powerful.
Interesting.
Yeah.
And as I listen to you speak, I'm getting those flashes of recognition that I know you and that we work together in a couple lifetimes at least. Yeah. That always feels good. Well, I think later in the show, I'll ask you to bring a message through, but I want to talk about your organization. I want everybody to know what you do and what goes on. So let's talk about the Heart Center. What are your current offerings? What do you do? Just tell us about the organization as a whole, and then I want to go down into specifics.
Sure. So we broadcast every morning, and we've been broadcasting for 20 years free of charge. We video stream 2 hours in the morning from 7 to 9 Mountain Time. And we have about 20 different centers from which we take turns broadcasting. Some are weekly. I broadcast Wednesday mornings, Sunday mornings from Montana, other groups, Mount Shasta and San Diego. And Texas and Chicago and the East Coast broadcast other days. And so this is our prayer and meditation service. And then I either give a live message if I'm there or a recorded message if I'm not there. So we've been doing that and it's very powerful. We have quarterly conferences at the solstices and equinoxes every year. We've been doing that for 20 years. We've been had pilgrimages all over the world. We went to Egypt in 2006 with 99 people, to India with 68 people, to Machu Picchu, and we were actually there at the special Amaru Gate and over, near Lake Titicaca on 12/21/12, the end of the Mayan calendar. It was a
Yes.
very powerful mystic experience, and there were like five other groups, and most of us were all wearing white, which was really interesting. So it's like we all converged at that moment, which was an epic moment, the end of the Mayan calendar,
Yes, it was for me too.
and we danced together. It was really fun, and we've been all over the world, and we have an online university called Mayer University. And it's we've given over 100 different classes, and I've taught over 70. They're very powerful. A lot of the Essene teachings, a lot of Aquarian teachings, Saint Germain comes, all these various masters, Buddhas, and they're very profound. And then there's interactivity with the students. So
Right.
that's wonderful.
Well, let me give a synopsis for the listener. So the Heart Center includes a university, an institute, and a publishing company. But
Right.
first, a question popped up into my mind. You started all of this in February 2005 with a group of others.
Right.
But we're talking now that you have a group in San Diego and you have a group here and a group there. It sounds like it grew so rapidly. What happened in that time right there? Where you started one thing in one place and then wound up with all these satellite groups.
Well, what happened was I was in the Summit Lighthouse for 30 years, and when Elizabeth Clare Prophet got dementia and retired in 1999, there was no new messenger. She was trying to train her children, and they rejected the opportunity to take the mantle. So I had prayed back in the 90s to be of service at the highest level that I could, to be a minister or whatever. And God hears your prayers when it's the right time, right? So I had been called back onto staff. They went through a huge downsizing in the 1999, 2000. 2001, and I stayed on staff for a while, but then my job was eliminated. So I had an art gallery actually at the time, and I just worked there full time.
Right.
But then they asked me to come back and be what's called the Keepers of the Flame Fraternity director. So I did that for 2 years. I saw some things which I didn't appreciate or like in terms of the way the leadership was treating some of the groups around the world, especially in Russia. And so, right. When this thing happened with Russia, I said, I'm out of here. I'm out of here. And the day after I gave notice, a month notice, because I gave them a month notice that I was quitting my job, the very, like 2 days later is when Jesus gave the first message. So God already had a plan for me, but I didn't know what it would result in. I just started getting the messages. So when I got 33 messages from Mark Prophet in an ascended state, his name is Lunello, I gave them to the leadership of CUT or the Summit Lighthouse. They rejected me. I got excommunicated, which was fine. And then the master said, start a new movement. So I sent those 33 messages, which I had, they were all written, but I had to type them up. I sent them to all the study groups around the world. And the one in Detroit, everybody who was in the summit in Detroit, except for one person, came into the Heart Center. Little pockets of people around the United States and Sweden and other places immediately felt that this was true. And when they read them, those that never read them rejected me because the leadership said I was false, blah, blah, blah.
Of
But
course.
when people actually read it and meditated, they could feel the light. They could feel the import of the message that we had to change as an organization, get back to the roots of being loving and kind and not, you know, we became a fear-based organization with the shelter cycle, and it was horrendous in Montana.
Right.
So a lot of people left then. So the masters desired to reconfigure the organization into its original purpose, which was like a
Absolutely.
brotherhood and not a church, churchy. It was
Right.
supposed to be a community of light. So that's what we have in our movement is a community of light. And it's all based on love. It's all based on Jesus teaching, love your neighbor, you know, God with your heart, by your heart, mind, strength, and soul, and your neighbor as yourself. And that foundation of the humble servant leaders is what we're all about. So Yes, groups sprung up all over because they read those 33 messages.
Beautiful. Clearly, Jesus had a plan for you. It's nice that you prayed, but he had a plan for you, obviously.
I'll tell you one other funny thing. A
Sure.
year after we began in 2006, a lady came to me who I loved and was very nice. And we called her the Angel Lady because she would sell angel materials at all these little fairs. She told me that she had a vision of me when she met me back in 1985. The first time she met me, she had a vision that I would carry on Elizabeth Clare Prophet's mission. And she was shocked. I was like 29. And this was when the Summit Lighthouse was at its peak at a place that we call Camelot in Southern California. So she held that in her heart for 20 years. And one day I saw her in Livingston, Montana, when I had my art gallery. She was walking down the street. I invited her into my art gallery and I said, "Susan, I received a message today from Mother Mary." And I knew she loved the Mother Mary. She looks like Mother Mary. So I came and I read it to her. And her face just, she couldn't believe it. So she had watched me for 20 years. How is David Lewis going to carry on the message? The mission of Elizabeth Clare Prophet. She never told me. She never told anybody else except her family. Then it happened. And then she was one of the first people that supported me 100%. And it wasn't until a year after the Heart Center began, she told me about her vision. So I had her speak about this vision at one of our conferences. You could hear a pin drop. People were aghast that it was already prophesied. Was already planned,
It's already
and
written.
it was already written in space. So I knew when I was in second grade I had a mission. You know,
Me
I
too.
knew when I watched the movie about Song of Bernadette, I cried and cried and cried. I wanted to be like her. So that was pretty prophetic.
Know when it happened for me?
Yeah, what
Do you
happened?
remember in the 70s when that Coke commercial came out? I'd like to teach the world to sing in perfect harmony and keep
Right.
it company. That hit me hard. And I said, that's what I want to do.
You're doing it.
It was all about harmony, that little resonance within me. Very cool. But I wanted to say, and just for clarity, so are you saying it was Summit Lighthouse, but then it had become contaminated basically by ego, and then you took over and it became the Heart Center?
Well, I didn't take over they rejected me. So what happened was, it was first the Summit Lighthouse was not churchy. In 1974 and 5, they began Church Universal and Triumphant. Then it became very churchy with ministers and wearing robes and all, you know, various sacraments and all that. And then when Elizabeth Clare Prophet passed, all these ministers, they were like vying for power, in my opinion. Not all of them, but some of them. And they were not in the servant leadership mode. They regaled themselves with their mantles. And everybody who was more sensitive and who really had become the teaching themselves through introspection and work on themselves psychologically, etc., they could see this. And so there was a lot of contention, and eventually other messengers, quote, sprung up in different places. And every last one of them they rejected and excommunicated. And I was told there would be no more messengers, even though Mark Prophet said there would be a messenger in the Summit Lighthouse for 1,000 years. So what changed? It was, in my opinion, it was ego and a grasping for power and authority. So now it's become more of a library, like Theosophy or the Saint Germain Foundation. They don't have any current messengers. It's just a library, which is okay. You know, it's still great teaching, but there's not the empowerment of the Holy Spirit through an individual person who's sponsored and anointed. Let's put it that way. Yeah.
But it became what it became, and from what I can see, you brought back the integrity. You brought it back to the original formula of
That's
peace
what
and
those
humility.
33, yeah, those 33 messengers from Mark was about, getting back to our roots
Right.
of a community.
So it doesn't surprise me that all of those people resonated with the 33 messages
Right.
and said, this is where we need to be. Okay. Just wanted to get that story straight in my mind. Okay. So the Heart Center includes a university, an institute, and a publishing. So we talked about the university. It's Maru University. And my question was, did you choose it to represent Mount Maru? I'm aware of a Mount Maru and the meaning behind it. Was that part of your
Well, the interesting idea? Thing, that's part of it, although there is a certain stream of esoteric traditions, there are what's called root races. And even in India, and the, you know, the Hindu teaching, the Vedic teaching, there are these root races that embodied on Earth. The first three root races supposedly all ascended because the Earth was pristine and pure. Mm-hmm. And then there was the fall of man. So during the fourth root race, so there's the fourth, fifth, and then the last 2,000 years with the sixth root race. The Aquarian age is according to this teaching, the seventh root race is coming in now. Mm. So the god and goddess Meru are what's called the Manus of the sixth root race. And their etheric retreat is over South America, where we went on 12-21-12. And there was a transfer of the leadership of that etheric retreat in the heaven world over Lake Titicaca, whereby the ascended Elizabeth Clare Prophet, Mark Prophet, went to take over that retreat. And the god and goddess Meru took over, went to the sun. And then the beings in the sun here went to the center of our galaxy. So there's a progression of initiation where, you know, we rise in levels of awareness and we take on greater mantles, authority, as well as responsibility. So this was prophesied even through Mark Prophet years ago that eventually when Elizabeth would ascend, they would go to Lake Titicaca. So we knew this, people in the Soma Lighthouse, but the actual date of it, they didn't know. Well, through me, it was conveyed that it happened then because it was the end of a very long cycle, probably a 25,000 plus year cycle, the precession of the equinoxes through all the 12 signs of the zodiac.
Okay.
So that's when it happened. And then, so that's why we name it Meru Press. The god and goddess Meru. But there's also Mount Meru, and it's the most sacred mountain in the Himalayas that the Buddhist traditions, the Hindu traditions, you know, they circumambulate that mountain. It's a very powerful, iconic energy vortex there with that mountain.
No doubt.
That's very powerful.
I can almost feel it now.
Yeah, I feel it.
Wow. Okay, that's good energy. So with the courses that you teach at the Heart Center, they include direct communications with the Ascended Masters, inspired discourses. You also have other people teaching a few courses. For the listeners, who benefits from these courses and events? What do people walk away with when they take courses at your university?
Well, there's a lot of illumination and enlightening teaching, yet you only get in what you put in, and you get out what you put in. So there, you have to engage. And that's why we have what we call darshans, which are question and answer sessions. So individual students can ask questions of the masters and get profound answers that blow me away half the time. I mean, it's new information. It's progressive revelation. Yet also, occasionally, the masters will ask the student question using the Socratic method, which I love because that draws the wisdom out of them. So it's a push-pull thing. I love it because I love it when people have little flashes of enlightenment and illumination themselves.
Me too.
And then we have this profundity of the collective energy of the enlightening grace that comes upon us by the Holy Spirit, where people are just in awe of what is happening when so-and-so speaks, somebody else speaks, and then I've had that same experience. I know exactly what you're talking about. So it builds this foundation of the community's brother sisterhood. It's a sacred energy that's what the Essenes did back 2,000 years ago. They had the same type of things. Of course, it was a little bit more disciplined back then, you had, you always wore white. They were total vegetarians. They got up early. They bathed twice a day. They called to all these angels. We do some of that, but not quite as intensely as the Essenes do.
Right. The listeners are going to be wondering what you mean by the Socratic method. Could you describe that for a second?
Well, Socrates would ask his students questions to draw out of them what they were learning. And it's a method that should be used everywhere in all schools because it's how children learn. Educare means, yeah, it's like,
I use it.
yeah, exactly. So you draw out of the student what they have to kind of
The
dig a little
answer's
bit.
in them.
It's in them.
The
And
answer's
we,
in them. And it's usually when they ask a question, the answer's usually in the question.
exactly.
So it's fun to get them to open up to the knowledge within.
Yeah. I think it's much better than them always just asking questions. Like on our staff, when we have staff meetings and someone has a suggestion or a question, they want to ask me, what do the masters say? And I go back and I say, okay, you make a proposal based on your best shot of how you think something should happen. Do your research, come with the facts, the figures, and then we'll collaborate and make a collective decision. And the masters can rubber stamp it if necessary. But see, it's much better to train people how to fish than to fish for them. So
Absolutely.
it's about spiritual growth.
My motto is that it's my job to get others to the point where they don't need someone like me.
Exactly. I've told people hundreds of times, I'm only here temporarily
Yes.
as a goad and as, a means to an end of your personal enlightenment, self-realization, and ascension.
Right. Yeah, I'm only here for a certain amount of time. I don't have an apprentice. Anyway, I want to touch quickly on you have a publishing company and you've published 11 titles. I'm going to discuss with you only three. We could probably expand that if you wish. That would be fine. But I also want to ask about the Paradise Permaculture Institute that you started with your wife.
Yeah, there's actually 14 books, by the way, but that's
Oh,
okay.
14. I'm sorry.
Yeah, it's okay. That's what our thing said.
Well, you keep cranking them out so quickly.
I have a great team.
I had to count.
We have a lady that came as a I kind of tutor her a lot. She's a PhD from Harvard, and she is amazing. The rest of our team is all amazing. But anyway, Paradise Permaculture Institute. We found a little over 10 years ago on our property and outside of Livingston, Montana. We teach about getting back to nature through how nature does things. Instead of monocropping like corn or soybeans or wheat or rye or whatever, it depletes the soil of the nutrients that the soil requires for the optimal health of the plant. So we teach how to do things the way nature does it, intermixing things. And building up the soil and nurturing the soil, because when the soil's healthy, the plants are healthy. And so what inspired us was Anastasia, who is this mystic in Russia. And a friend of mine gave us these books, or gave us one book about Anastasia, and it changed our lives. And so we dedicated one aspect of our life to teaching and helping to basically get everybody to garden, to grow their own organic live food. So they could, because look at what the food is depleted now. It doesn't have all the nutrients. The soil's not healthy. So if people can grow their own food, they can survive in case there's an issue, but also it's much tastier. So we go to the farmer's market, we sell to the health food store in town. We have 30 by 48 rolling high tunnel greenhouse. It moves on a track to three positions,
Okay.
and we plant lots of food, and we actually sell more than we use ourselves. But my wife's daughter is the key person that helps my wife Mona in the gardens and the greenhouse, and her husband owns an Italian restaurant that's now world famous in Livingston, and we sell them a lot of tomatoes and spinach and arugula and other greens. It's really fun to grow stuff and see the results of your labor as the beautiful plants come up. And I love getting my hands, dirty, and I do a lot of the heavy work. My wife does most of the work. But
Okay.
I have a tractor, and so this is another aspect of my life that I love. And when I retire, I'm just going to work outside all the time because I love being in nature. And I don't know that I'll ever retire fully, but
I was just thinking
yeah, I'm not gonna, I
that.
won't. But if I didn't have all the responsibilities that I have, I would spend a lot more time in their gardens.
I think you'll be at a point where you can delegate for the most part, but to walk away, you can't. You can't
No,
do that.
no,
It's
I
such
can't.
a big part of you. It
Yeah.
is you. You know, it's everything you're about.
Right.
And it sounds like Mona, your wife, walks step in step with you in everything you
She's
believe in. She sounds wonderful.
when I first met her at a Chinese restaurant, I was recently divorced. She was still married. I saw her and I saw her aura, and it was just pure white light blazing around her, crystalline. I said, "Who is this woman?" I started crying, and I said, "It's an honor to be in your presence." And it wasn't a come on because, she was married, but her husband passed that year of pancreatic cancer. They didn't know he was sick at the time, but he had, once they found out what it was, he was gone in 3 weeks. But
Yeah, it's
so
terrible.
after he passed, then we got together, and it was all destined because I had a dream that we were married in another life as Native Americans. So,
That's a beautiful story, and I'm sorry she didn't get too much of a lead up to his passing. I know that the suddenness is it can practically destroy you when it's sudden like that.
right.
Wow. You sound like you have such a wonderful life. So let's talk about the book. All right, let's give this some time.
Sure.
Jesus's Jewels of Joy. Now, this came through right before Christmas for you, and you started writing down these little, you call them
Heart streams.
heart streams. That's sweet. So you got these heart streams, and then Jesus would offer commentary about them. So give us a little synopsis of what it is, what it's about, and then there's a couple passages I'd like to read from it.
Well, it's all about joy. In the introduction to the book, I mentioned that we feel in the Summit Lighthouse, it was said that Jesus' keynote, which is his music, sacred music, is joy to the world. So we knew that. And when he came, it was in 2017, I believe. And this was pre-pandemic, and
Okay.
I just have to read one of these. I know you're going to read your favorites,
Oh,
but
go right ahead.
on page 86, let joy's enthusiasm become the Earth's attractive new pandemic. We were all kind of bummed out during the pandemic when all the restrictions were on everybody and people were masking. It was ridiculous, and it was all, whatever. People were just, it was crazy. So Jesus already had, three years before this all happened, he was getting us ready to be joyous. But what it is there's a being who embodies the virtue of joy. And so Jesus kind of uses joy with a capital J to personify this being, this feminine being of joy, and express these beautiful conscious principles, values, and essences that he shared with me, on a daily basis for, I don't know, it was probably a couple of weeks. It was during Advent, so I think it was about a 3 week period. And then it culminated right before Christmas. And it just brings us to a fountain of inner joy, which is where we have to go for that. So they're sweet, they're short, and then he would, like you said, elaborate on it and kind of explain things more. But I'll let you read your favorites.
Okay. Well, it's important to note because I read this in the beginning of the book, the notes and disclaimers. And it's something important to make mention of because it mentions the Universal Great White Brotherhood, which I am familiar with. I've worked with them in a book called MAP, MAP, a medical assistance program. And that's where a group of spirits who are medical professionals will work on you when you articulate what is wrong.
Wow.
And so I have tried it. A friend of mine recommended it, and she said it works. So I tried it, and I had for just for a quick example, you know, when you get a split in the middle of your bottom lip, and then it heals, and then it happens again. Then it heals, and then it splits again.
Yeah.
I was on my fifth or sixth round with this. I was so frustrated. I was trying to heal it myself, but it was steering me towards the book. So that's why I couldn't heal it. So I had to try this method. So because I'll believe it when I see it type of person.
Right.
I'm not a person who reads books and regurgitates. 99% of what I talk about is from direct personal experience.
Exactly.
So I tried this method out with, it's called MAP, M-A-P. And towards the end, or I'll put in the comments, you know, where to get the book and who the author is. But these spirits, I could feel them tapping on my leg. They surround you. It includes the healing Deva and Pan, the god with the lowercase g, Pan. So right. I got to meet him as well. And he said, will you help me? And so I got back into my healing work. But they were tapping onto my bottom lip. And it healed and it never happened again.
Wonderful.
So what you say in the notes, gender-neutral language can at times be cumbersome. For readability, we have freely used he, him, mankind, and man to refer to both male and female as well as to the divine. The term man with a capital M refers to mankind in general. Brotherhood refers to the universal great white brotherhood. And they're talking about white light. That's my point.
Right.
It's talking about white light, not, you know.
Not race. It's yeah.
Not what people might have a reflexive reaction to. The great white brotherhood, whose membership in the heaven world and in embodiment is both male and female. Here, the word white refers to the white light of their auras. To distinguish the soul from the spirit aspect of being, we often use she and her when referring to the soul, and he and him when referring to the spirit. But like you said, this feminine energy is the embodiment of joy. So when you speak about joy throughout the book, it's referred to as she and her. And I thought that was quite interesting.
The whole book, right.
Okay. So on page 69, and this is in chapter 12, A New Mantra to Expand Joy. In paragraph 4 of Jesus's commentary, it says, trust in God creates the vehicle for joy's effulgent appearance and work. You have heard the term let go and let God. By letting go of the lesser self, you do allow God to take hold of you and to behold you, even as you behold the Lord. This beholding process is the co-creation of perfect trust and harmony between you, the monad, and in the microcosm, and God, the monad, in the macrocosm. Sustaining the sacred bond is the work of the ages of your soul. And once you are fully fixed within God and his perfect will, wisdom, and love, joy springs forth eternal within you, and life is worth living. I felt that was worth mentioning because my students and my clients and my followers oftentimes, and even I at times, have a difficult time accessing the joy that I know that is there eternally. It doesn't change. It doesn't move. It can't be altered. It just gets covered up by moods and thoughts and beliefs and self-pity and other emotions, other negative emotions. So I wanted to read that. The other paragraph that really struck me, this brings tears to my eyes. This is in chapter 30. Let joy be your guide, your path, and your welcome home. And the word home always makes me feel warm inside. It warms my heart. So on page 147, the third paragraph down, it says, God does not require the perfectionment of the human mind, the human ego, the human personality. God asks for you to accept the heart of perfect joy that he has provided within his servant, sons, and daughters, the Christ of all and the Christ of yourself. Yes, God has provided the way out for you through your own higher self, one with the great God-Son source of being. Although you look to me or to other avatars and teachers, world savers and gurus, we all point back to the Christ and higher self of yourself as the fount of pure joy upon your path. Drink from your own fountain of joy this day, the joyous reality of God's ever-abiding love radiance, and listen to the songs of joy that his angels sing day and night into your soul as that beautiful boon towards your victory in joy. I am your Jesus, ever abiding within your heart as the Christ essence of your own awareness of God as joy.
I'm getting chills.
Jesus, all right.
Yeah, I'm getting chills, yeah.
You know it's him when he says perfectionment. If I ask a question out of fear, he says, Charlotte, that's nothing but worryment. Do not indulge in worryment. This is Jesus talking, people. This is Jesus throughout the whole book. I highly recommend it. On page 153, chapter 33, I set my seal upon the deliverer of jewels of joy. That's him putting his stamp on this. Now go forth and be that God reality who you are in great joy. Paragraph 1 of the commentary says, blessed hearts, you have indeed brought joy to the world by supporting this dispensation, messenger, and movement, which has allowed me to inspire these jewels upon him so that this world may receive greater joy from my heart. As you know, I have had many remenuenses. That means scribe. It means that you simply record and write down what he says. Amanuenses throughout this 2,000-year period. For those who are devoted to my sacred heart have received the great grace and benefit of my personal anointing, instruction, and spiritual edification of their souls. In some cases, I have taken this opportunity to expand what one has received to benefit many more upon earth through locution and the recording of my message to those souls so that they may go far and wide across the earth to benefit others who would also commune with me. It is not so strange that I have chosen one or another to speak to, for I told you long ago that I was going to prepare a place in my Father's house for you, each one, and that greater works than these would be done because I was going unto the Father. You know the truth of any communication from my heart when it resonates within yours. You know my voice spoken through one or another because it is the self-same voice that spoke in Galilee and speaks now within you. The message of love, of joy, and of grace is what is important for each of you to understand, discerning within what is required for you to know, to do, to dare, and to be silent about as you study these words, and then make them real in your life through action, through holy works of love, through service to humanity. I'll leave it there, but they can feel it. That's Jesus speaking through you, through me, and to all of us. This is beautiful. What a wonderful job you've done with this.
Praise God.
I'll be reading this. Oh, I'll be reading this going forward for sure. Just to set the tone for my day, I think I would love to. I start my day with him, but that will help too. This is absolutely wonderful. So we mentioned bringing through a message. And is it a situation where you don't know who's coming through, or do you know? Do you have a sense of what message will come through you today?
Well, from Jesus, of course.
Okay.
Because that's what you focused on.
I leave room because I know how busy the conference room table can get.
Well, Jesus says that peace is for those who progress through love unto the Father's table and home. We're all prodigal sons and daughters of God in one sense, because we've gone out of the way of that perfected state of pure beingness and God's eternal presence simply by the fact that we've incarnated in matter, in the matter planes. It is the time for each and every one of God's precious sons and daughters to return to the eternal home of light in the heaven world, the holy city, the New Jerusalem, Shambhala, whatever you may desire to call it, the pure land of the Buddhas. And this return is unique for each person based on their pathway, their predilections, their dedication or lack thereof, their focus or lack thereof, their constancy and discipline. And the invitation is always there to be at the table with the Lord, to be at the table with the Lord, to receive both the communion that maybe the church has offered as a symbol of what that communion means and that sacred brother-sisterhood and tryst between hearts. Yet more importantly than the physical host and wine, the communion with the heart of the great masters of love, wisdom in the heaven world, and there are many, many, and the sacred angels, the archangels, all the nine choirs of angels, seraphim, cherubim, thrones, dominions, powers, virtues, principalities, archangels, and angels. All of them are at the service of the sons and daughters of God when, through humility, they pray, they call them forth, to help with any situation that arises, any burden that occurs, any gnarly issue, maybe in a relationship or a job experience or anything that arises, there is an answer. There is a way out and a way in. And that way is made plain when we go within and ask for whatever we require with love in our hearts and with humility and the sure knowledge that God, the great giver and the great creator of everything, is there for us and desires for his, her children to receive what they require. Because we as parents only give our children the best that we can give. Should we expect less from God? Of course not. So praise God for what you require, even before you physically have it, by simply saying, "My Lord, I am happy, I am joyous, that my need is met right now in this situation, even before I ask." And remember Jesus' words, my words. When I prayed, I always said, "Thank you, God, for hearing my prayer. I'm only saying the words so that those who hear me may know that I ask this in purity from thee, and yet I know your answer is here now." There are so many situations around the world that require prayer. There are so many burdens that people have. If they would simply go within and ask for the solution, the resolution, the answer, it is there. Yet take time to listen after you ask for the answer. And when you feel the authenticity of the answer with a little charge of energy and a little radiation or a tingling in your spine or the little ripples through your auric field, then you know that the Holy Spirit is there and I am there. The Christ is there within you to restore unto you grace, blessings, and what you require. Life is not so hard when you make it simpler by being true to yourself, by being in the Spirit, and realizing what is important, which is not the human ego or power or authority or fame or money or riches. The riches of the Spirit are within your heart right now to access through love. Love one another as I have loved you. Cherish one another as I have cherished you. And serve one another as I have served you as your great shepherd. You're a good shepherd, my beloved. Thank you.
This is the first time I've ever heard him speak through someone else. It's just been him and me for 23 years, you know. So that was very beautiful. This has been extraordinary, David. And on behalf of the listeners, I want to thank you for sharing your beautiful light, your wisdom, and Jesus's wonderful message. I hope you've had a good time here.
Oh, Charlotte, you're wonderful. You're a sister of old and a sister newly rediscovered. I love you. I love you too. Your heart.
I love you too. Ladies and gentlemen, to learn more about how you can elevate your spiritual journey, visit theheartcenter.org. Don't forget, hearts is plural. The name of the book is Jesus's Jewels of Joy. It's available at the website and also on Amazon.com. Visit spiritualinsightsradio.com to join my community or book a private session with Yeshua and the Divine Team. We'd be honored to assist you. Wherever you get your podcast, I hope you'll leave a rating and a comment that will tell others there's something valuable for them to hear. Well, that's our show for today, everyone. Until next time, God bless and be at peace.